Books of the Bible. The book of Revelation describes visions given to the Apostle John by Jesus Christ concerning the consummation of history. Its symbolic style makes Revelation a mystery to many. But you can understand much by asking what are the setting and action and who are the characters. When you wonder how it's all going to end, God has given Revelation just for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Uh-oh. Was Revelation 2 written to you? This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, how would you like to be the guinea pig?
Well, I mean, I was just about to ask you if you thought it was written to you.
Thank you. You've walked right into my trap. Oh. You're the guy I want to talk about here.
Okay.
Because Jimmy was right. Revelation 2 is not written to you. Revelation 2 is written for you. The original audience is to whom it was written. And unless you were alive in the first century, and wow, what I hate to see the bunions on your feet, it was not written to you. It was written for you. And Jimmy recognized that. And it might actually be a sign, Jimmy, that you have a malady.
Oh, I'm sick?
We'll be the judge of that.
Okay.
They're received an email from somebody talking about how they become kind of critical, where everything that they're consuming and thinking about the faith is in a gear that doesn't seem to allow anything inside of them. It is locked in. Is anything wrong with that? Did that get said? Is that the correct verse? Hey, what translation are they using? Was it written to or was it written for? And you consume everything through that gear. I'm not sure that illustration is exactly consistent, but you get my point. Does that describe you? And here's another sign that maybe it has. And I recognize there's a challenge to this. So let me just get the caveat taken care of up front. When you first got saved, you were giddy, I trust. You were just amazed. This is so awesome. It's like life went from black and white to technicolor, but then the years went by and you learned more and more and more, and those feelings abated. Now, here's the caveat. They can't stay that high. They just can't. It's not the way emotions work. That really like, whoa, whoop-de-doo feeling, I think it demands newness. It demands freshness. I actually had the pleasure. It was such a lovely day. Last Friday, I got to officiate a wedding. And the two starry-eyed kids, they were just, oh, oh, oh. And it was so fun to watch because I remembered it so well. And it's just really like, oh, it's nice to see that happening. Enjoy that sweet season. That's just fun stuff. But then the preacher, Pastor Killjoy, had to remind them that buzzy feeling is not going to take you through life. It's not going to be what sustains your marriage, because love isn't just an affection. Love won't keep you together. Love isn't all you need. You need more than that. However, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have love. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't have warm feelings. But note, they are going to change over the years. That's the caveat, because we're now going to talk not about marriage love, not about romantic love. We're going to talk about our love for God. When you first got saved, amazing. And maybe you sang your fool head off in the car. I know I did. You couldn't contain it. But over the years, that feeling is no longer there. Again, remember the caveat, it has to change. But is it possible that in our increasingly informed theological brains that we have perhaps left feelings behind completely because our brains are locked in a gear? I think that there's a lot of ways to listen. All right, I'm not sure this illustration is going to work, but frankly, that applies to pretty much every illustration I concoct. If you're listening, how do you listen to music? You probably can't answer that question. because you would want to ask some questions. Well, what's the setting here? Am I at the same? You're going to listen. If you go to a concert and you paid like with these ridiculous ticket prices, you paid like $500 for your ticket. And that isn't crazy these days. They're just outrageously expensive. I just teach their own, but man, those are, you're going to be pretty critical, I think. You get in for free, you're going to listen differently. Go to a symphony. And especially if you're a classical music student, you're going to be listening differently, aren't you? If you, let's say you are a music student and you're in class and you're listening to music and you are asked to break it down, you're going to be listening very critically and listening to make sure that you are hearing everything that the professor wants you to identify. In other words, we hear differently. Now you put that same song on in the car, and that's another way to listen. You maybe listen, you don't pay attention, you're driving, oh, look at that billboard, and you come back to the song, or the song is over. There's different ways to listen. And I'm wondering if the reason that so many of us are perhaps lacking in some of the initial love and enthusiasm that we had, remember my caveat, we're deficient in that regard. It's because our brains are locked in hyperborean mode. We are never to stop being discerners, ever, ever, ever. But there's a danger in becoming a really good discerner and loaded with intellectual knowledge about God. Now, those things are good and right. I'm just saying there's a danger. And Revelation 2 describes this danger as it addresses a church called Ephesus. And as I read this, I'm going to ask you, does this describe you? Does this describe your Christian experience presently? He's talking to the first church, Ephesus. I know your works, your labor, your patience, and that you cannot bear those who are evil. Does that describe you? You see sin and it's exceedingly sinful to you. You're like, come on, look at what they're doing. This is awful the way people are. Romans 1. And it continues. And you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not, and you found them liars. You can identify false teachers, boom, like that. And so you tend to listen to things for what's going to be said that might reveal that somebody's a false teacher. The Ephesian Christians were really good at that. Does that describe you? Verse 3, and you've persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have become weary and have not become weary. I hope that describes you. You've been at work for the Lord. Thumbs up, good thing. Verse 4, nevertheless, I have this against you. You left your first love. And I think this helps us with our caveat. Now, leaving our first love, you can leave those buzzy feelings behind because I think they do need to get replaced with something, but is it possible they haven't been replaced? I think that's what is being described here in Revelation 2. It's not that it's saying you need to return to those, well, I'll just use the word, less than mature, petty feelings. It's not saying you can go back to those, but it is saying you should go back to the first love and it should be more mature and it should be different. Don't return, don't seek to go back to that giddy feeling, but return to your first love. Does that describe you? If that letter doesn't hit home, perhaps this letter that I received at idea@wretched.org might. I'm going to ask you, is this you? And because you can't talk to me, Jimmy is going to be your federal head. Jimmy, we're going to see if you can relate to any of this email.
Okay.
Are you ready, sir?
I am.
I just heard last Thursday's episode about topical and expository preaching.
I heard it too. I relate.
And I'm sorry for that. And it made me think about how when I was more charismatic and didn't have a lot of knowledge about God, at that time, I could just turn on a new worship song, new worship music, and worship God and feel close to Him. You can relate to that?
I think so, yeah.
Hold on. You're going to definitely, I think, find yourself in it. Now, I just worry about the theology of the singer of or the song.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question. Should you be concerned about the theology of the singer of the song?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course you should. We don't just become dum-dums and, okay, whatever, I just got to return to my first love, so I'm not going to discern nothing. No, we discern. But is that the totality of your listening experience? It's all about discerning. This is, I get it. I understand that this could whiplash and ricochet all over the place. Keep discerning. But don't let discernment be the totality of how you learn and how you listen and how you worship. And this can stunt us so damagingly. The email continues, if you have not been tagged by this yet. I used to think weird things that happened or coincidences were signs or answers to prayer. Now it seems whatever happens, I don't see anything like that. Jimmy, can you relate to that?
I think so, yeah.
I remember that. I remember even early on in my walk just going, and wait, no, it's not a God thing because everything is a God thing. No, God didn't just show up because he's always here. But I was way more free with recognizing that God is working. I'm so concerned that I don't cross a line that I'm indicating that God is doing some sort of tangible miracle here, but because that might disqualify my cessationist thinking that I never see him working at all. Does that describe you? If not, we'll continue this examination and hopefully find the cure if you struggle. Well, frankly, like all of us do. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Picture this. Every morning, countless Christians are waking up and wondering how they're going to navigate today's increasingly complex and upside-down world. And that's where Fortis Institute comes in. Not just another ministry, but your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. I mean, you've probably noticed that we're different from our daily podcasts like Integrated with Dr. John Krotz or Thrive with Pastor Brad Bigney. We're bringing together some of the most trusted voices in Christianity to help you and your local church thrive. But here's the thing. This mission, well, it takes resources, and that's where you come in. By becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just supporting a ministry, you're investing in the spiritual fortification of countless believers and local churches across the nation. So will you join us? Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, and together we can help Christians stand strong in their faith no matter what challenges tomorrow brings. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
For 25 years, Fortis Institute has been building something powerful, a reservoir of biblical truth deep enough to change lives and strong enough to transform churches. But we've realized something very profound. Truth was never meant to be contained. It was meant to flow freely, reaching every single person, every hungry heart, every searching mind, and that's why we're doing something unprecedented. We're breaking the dam. Truth Unhindered isn't just a campaign name, it's our vision for the future. It's about removing every barrier between solid teaching and those who need it the most. We have extraordinary plans for the second half of 2025, but to make this moment possible, we need your partnership now more than ever. Right now, through the end of June, every gift you give will be matched. Your generosity today becomes a flood of truth tomorrow. Just visit FortisInstitute.org/truth right now before June 30th and help us break the dam and let the truth flow unhindered. FortisInstitute.org/truth.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. The first name given to God is Elohim in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Elohim is a plural noun, but the verb created is singular. God is plural in personhood, but singular in being. The Creator God is the triune Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
When a good thing becomes a bad thing, this is Wretched Radio. Christians are learners. The Christian faith, it is a faith that is built on truth and knowledge. Facts, ma'am. We are not the mystical religion. We don't empty our brains. We fill our brains. That is a good thing, comma, but it can become a bad thing. Received an email sent to idea@wretched.org. As you recall, Jimmy is your federal head. He's answering on your behalf if this describes you. Is it possible that you've left your first love because of knowledge? Now, I didn't say you left your first love, meaning you're not saved. That's not what I mean. Furthermore, if you recall the caveat that we're working with here, that initial buzzy, heady feeling, you're not supposed to return to that, according to John in Revelation 2, but you are told, if you're a member of the Church of Ephesus, to return to your first love. It's going to be more mature. It's not going to be exactly the same. Don't go seeking that exact same feeling. But if you have no feelings, you're wondering, you know, why don't I ever kind of have that joy that I once had? Is it possible that knowledge has dinged you and we don't want to cast knowledge away? Oh, it caused an accident in my Christian walk, so I'm going to stop learning. No, not saying that, but I am saying that if you've become an individual who focuses primarily on finding the problems or the faults, I suspect you're not going to be a very joy-filled Christian. And I know whereof I speak. I am not casting stones from a glass house here. I know whereof I speak. My default position is I judge grammar. Okay, I can toss somebody's thought away because of bad grammar or word structure. Or like, you know, you didn't need to use a gerund there. You could have just, okay, great. So their grammar's wrong. What did they say? Did they say anything good? Maybe I didn't like the way they delivered it. Okay, I can recognize that. But if that disqualifies it getting into my ears and down to my heart, I think I got a problem. And I think this email that I received maybe we'll speak to you. Jimmy, let's see if this continues to speak for you. If you recall, the fellow who wrote in said, I used to listen to worship music and just sing along to the Lord. Now I listen to make sure that there's no heresy in that song. Mm-hmm. Hey, are they related to Bethel? I can't. Okay, which I actually think could disqualify it. My point is, that's your gear. You're just locked there. You don't really let anything all the way in. You're just looking to deflect. You're looking to point out. And because we're so preoccupied with finding the problem, we're so quick to, hey, identify the bones. We never consume the meat. Does that maybe describe you? I was a little surprised because I gave this some thought. This email struck me because I initially, when this individual said, I used to see God doing stuff, but now I'm like, well, got to be careful with that because, you know, sovereignty and all. And that's just God working and that's what he does. So to identify it and rejoice that, wow, God is active on this world. You don't want to compromise your cessationist position by saying things like, hey, God healed that person. Wait a second. Does that mean you believe that there's an apostolic gift of physical healing? No, it doesn't mean that, but it means that God is working. But I can be so concerned that I'm not stepping onto some sort of theological landmine. I'm becoming kind of, well, like the member of a church of Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. Let's continue with the email regarding praying. I used to pray fervently, knowing God heard me and would help me. Now it seems I pray and whatever happens, I chalk it up to his will. Oh boy, there it is. Sovereignty. Sovereignty. And maybe it's affected your prayer life because you're, look at Jesus in the garden. He requested stuff. Let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. But maybe you're even not very passionate about requesting because, well, the Lord's going to do what the Lord is going to do. Does that maybe describe you in some way, shape, or form? I don't know, this person wrote. Sometimes I just feel like my zeal is stunted by knowledge. Hmm. My love for God is clouded by works. I love being reformed, but sometimes it can feel so sterile and straightforward, like there's no time to just feel close to God or rest in his love for me. Does that perhaps describe you? Join the club. Join the club. That's I think that is pretty natural. It's not freaky. This is not an uncommon sort of experience for Christians. You learn a lot and things change. And I think there's some things that can help. Let me finish the letter. I'm never going back to the confusion of my early theology, and I'm blessed to have learned more about God. I just need to figure out a balance of knowing about God and knowing God. Anyways, that's all. God bless. Let's maybe start here. Let's start with how you and I are listening. What are you listening for? And I think a lot of us are afraid of this, of letting go, of having our brain be in the gear of hyper-discernment. You don't want to let the bad stuff in. Maybe some of that fear is born out of a fear of how people will respond to you if you're no longer that vigilant, because that's kind of a movement in our circles. You got to be vigilant, man, hyper-vigilant, and you got to be super discerning all the time. And if you're not, you're suspect or you're out of the club. Well, we should be vigilant. We should be discerning. But maybe you that's the totality of your Christian experience. I would encourage you to consider carefully changing the gear. Not that you abandon discernment, but that you listen so that you can be affected by it, so that you can grow from it. So that, how's about this for a kooky idea? So that you can enjoy God. This is what the early church, the Protestant church, talked about. The chief end of man is to glorify God and discern like crazy and point out every single problem you could potentially find, even if it just includes grammar.
They didn't say that.
I know it didn't say that. It said, enjoy God. Are you enjoying God? Is your knowledge bringing you to an enjoyment of God?
Yeah, I had a preacher tell me one time, and this is what really started to change my thinking on this exact topic. He said, son, faithful preaching doesn't just fill notebooks. Mm. It awakens your love for Christ.
Mm.
And that changed my life.
Yeah. Yeah. That look, I love notebooks, sir. I love them. Yeah. I really do. And those things are good. But I think that's one of the cures. And if the pastor isn't doing it, you're going to have to. I'm sorry, you're going to have to do the work on this. If you get lots of information, now the question is, what does this mean? And I think that you can go horizontal, but I think you should ask that question vertically. What does this mean about God? What does this wonderful teaching about, I don't care, pick whatever the theological subject is that the pastor was talking about the hypostatic union of Jesus Christ. And you're like, oh, I dig this. And it comes the Greek word hypostatic, and you're writing down the tense, what voice it is in, so you can let everybody know exactly how you're supposed to understand the text. I love it. But now you've got to go another step further. What are the implications of this doctrine? Specifically, what does it tell me about God? What does it tell me about how God views me? What does it tell me about the character of my Savior? And what does that mean for my life? If your sermons don't do that, you're going to have to do that. You'll have to do the mental work of moving it from head to heart. And I think a key, not the only one, but a key is asking, what does this teach me about God? Study creation, man. Be knocked out by it. You know, get into the sixth day and yom and making sure there's, hey, every time there's a number before a day, it always means a literal 24. Love it. Love it. What does it tell me? What does creation tell me about God? What does that tell me about God? I can study yom all day long in the Vav consecutive. But if I fail to recognize, whoa, out of nothing, he created everything out of nothing, and he did it on his timetable to set a calendar so that his son could come to die for sinners. Whoa, I worship an omnipotent God. Then you're probably going to be a Revelation 2 kind of Christian. Do that. Make sure you're listening for false teaching. Keep that there, but don't let that be your gear. And make sure if the preacher or the song doesn't do it for you, press it into your heart by asking the question, what does this truth teach me about God? Do that when you read, do that when you fellowship. And in time, you will return to your first love. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.